testing for nitrous oxide emissions.
So there's a slight amendment to the introduced title there. What I'll focus on here, as John alluded to, is nitrogen fertilizer rate management as a nitrous oxide mitigation strategy. So here I'll just outline the objectives of the study that I've been working with John and others at Michigan State University. It is to develop and implement an agricultural N2O emission reduction protocol, an NERP. The protocol that we're trying to develop needs to have certain attributes in order for it to be potentially economically, environmentally feasible. Those attributes are that it has to be scientifically robust, statistically rigorous. John went through a lot of some of the details about his work and how he applied statistics to his data. It needs to be relatively straightforward to some extent, such that the methodologies that are associated with the protocol are transparent to all stakeholders, not just producers, possibly aggregators, the carbon market in general, conservation groups. We need to have something that's relatively straightforward but scientifically robust in order to be potentially implemented in the future carbon markets that are presumably heading our way. So again, the protocol needs to provide an environmental incentive for it to be adopted, needs to have an economic incentive for it to be adopted, and also the emission reduction credits, which John's talked about, need to be tangible. We need to be able to, need to be fungible and transferable and relate to allowances from other sectors of the carbon emission sectors. So the presentation overview here is just a really quick introduction to the carbon market offset projects, project overview, some protocol developments. I'll bring in some factors that John's already mentioned, emission factors primarily, some results from this protocol development, and then some final conclusions. So this is just a quick slide on what sort of entities and organizations are out there which deal with the carbon offset market. You may or may not have heard of some of these. There's the Western Climate Initiative, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. What these organizations and others are trying to do is to look for opportunities in order to offset emissions from various other sectors, industrial sectors. They're looking for ways to meet their cap with regards to their emissions of CO2 or gases which have a CO2 equivalent, this global warming potential that John alluded to. So you can see some of the projects that people are, or the groups are looking into. For instance, the Western Climate Initiative, soil sequestration, manure management, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, against carbon sequestration. So these projects are all being talked about, but there's to some extent limited protocols and projects in place which could be used as offset projects for other industries. Agriculture and forestry have been somewhat controversial in these protocol developments, a lot of the time related to sort of a variability of the site's ecosystem and trying to tie down this data such that we can use them with some degree of confidence. So other factors, other organizations out there, the Chicago Climate Exchange, for example, already has protocols and projects based around agricultural soil carbon sequestration. But as of now, there is no nitrous oxide reduction protocol which is on the books and which is utilized by projects for mitigation of nitrous oxide from agriculture. And I'll talk a little bit more about the VCS, the Voluntary Carbon Standard, which is an organization which is hoping to develop these projects and protocols for use in the offset project marketplace. So here's just a rough overview of a VCS project cycle. Initially, what I'll do is I'll introduce the sector within the Voluntary Carbon Standard, which our project work is going to be hopefully implemented in, and that's this agriculture, forestry, and other land use management sector, AFOLU. Within that, there are forestry sectors as well, REDD, and other forestry projects which could be implemented. We're talking specifically here about the section of agricultural land management, and within that, there's another subsection, if you like, improved cropland management. So this project cycle we're trying to develop, what we need to do initially is to develop the actual protocol itself. There's nothing in place in these registries which would enable a producer or a company to come along and say, hey, we're going to use this protocol and this methodology and we're going to associate it with this project. So we have to develop the protocol in the first place, and this is where John's data feeds into. So initially the protocol document is handed in, if you like, and then there's a project document which is associated with that protocol. And a lot of the work that John's been doing and others at Michigan State is to sort of, if you like, get a producer on board to utilize his land, potentially to be involved in these projects which would associate the protocol that we're developing at the moment. So just not to go too far into detail, a lot of that information is on John's sites on the top. We've also got an automated gas flux chamber measurement system down at the KBS long-term ecological research site, Again, I won't go into too much details of the specifics of the design, but again, it's a number of N rates on plots, and we're looking at the nitrous oxide emissions from it. The data I'll look at today is derived from John's 8-site year of data. And again, not to go back and repeat too much what John talked about, but we're trying to do some comparisons here between these Tier 1 and Tier 2 approaches. Tier 1 being this default IPCC value of 1%, 0.01. It's constant across all N rates. What John has developed and what others have developed is a regional value, a more, if you like, not quite site-specific, but a more applicable EF value for, in our case, Michigan. Maybe it could be extrapolated to the Midwest, depending on site conditions. And that is a variable emission factor. It varies with N rate. It's not constant. So on the bottom left, you can see that these 0.01, this 1%, is derived from IPCC documentation, National Greenhouse Gas Inventories. The one on the right, the bottom right, is a graph. No need to pay too much attention to it, but what it is it's data from John's work derived to show that we can actually get an equation for an emission factor for Michigan, which alters with N rate, and hence that exponential factor at the bottom. So we're going to make the comparisons between these Tier 1 and Tier 2 approaches and look at the nitrous oxide emission reductions we can get by utilizing them both. As John mentioned earlier, we need to obviously have an economic and a component mixed in here, and we don't want to decrease yield to any extent. So what we've done here is incorporated the Tier 1 and Tier 2 approaches with this Iowa State University corn N rate calculator. And this is an N rate calculator based not on yield goal, but based on economic optimum returns to nitrogen. So what you have here is options for, there are 7 Midwest states available at the moment with data from multiple sites which have fed into this data set. There's an option for rotation. And here we have these components here, fertilizer cost and crop price. And what we do is we can derive ratios of nitrogen price to crop price. In this case, it's corn and a corn-soybean rotation. So we have ratios, which each ratio will generate data relating to the maximum return to nitrogen, the MRTN approach. So you can see here that, in this case, it's a Michigan-based system. We have a ratio of about 0.1. And what it does, it generates a maximum return to nitrogen, one single N rate yield, but what it also does generate is an economically profitable nitrogen rate range around that MRTN, and it's defined as a dollar per acre plus or minus of the maximum return to nitrogen. So we have this range of roughly 120 to 140 around the MRTN rate. And what we're going to do here with this MRTN range, profitable range, is generate effectively the credits for a potential project that would be implemented. What we have here is the reduction between the top, the high MRTN rate profitable range, to the low MRTN rate profitable range. And what we have when we do that, reduce that N, is generate emission reductions for N2O. So we generate the credit which could be utilized in a carbon market on a CO2 equivalent basis to get effectively cash back for a project which reduces N rate on site. Again, it would assume initially that the producer would tend to apply the higher rate. If he's given a range of a profitable N rate, he would tend to apply the higher rate of that in order to hedge against any inadequate nitrogen supply he thought he would have in the system. And again, just to reiterate what John was talking about, this is, again, snapshots of the actual corn rate calculator. That MRTN reduction from high to low, very little yield reduction. That 1% there is actually probably closer to 0.5% in total. I've rounded up the values. So no yield effect and a small N rate reduction. So here's a comparison here of the Tier 1 and Tier 2, which I've talked about earlier. And what you see here, again, is a similar graph to John, but it's actually real data here. We have this MRTN for Michigan reduced from the high to the low. I've converted it into kilograms of N from pounds of N. And this reduction A, with regards to the Tier 1, you could see that if you draw the lines up and go across to this B section here, you'd get roughly 0.3 of a kilogram of nitrous oxide N per hectare per year reduction if we assume this generalized IPCC default. However, if we use John's regionally derived equation, this Tier 2 equation, what you see if you take this reduction up to this where it intersects the line here, you get a much larger N2 emission reduction. So there's a much greater incentive environmentally to reduce the nitrogen rate without affecting crop yield. Again, you get roughly 4 times the amount of N2O N reductions with that Tier 2 approach. So again, in tabular form, what I've done here is convert it to carbon dioxide equivalents per acre per year, which is a more common way of presenting the data. And again, with Michigan highlighted in red, you see this reduction, 160 to 135. With a tier one, you generate 0.12 megagrams per CO2 per hectare per year. With the tier two, you generate 0.5. And when we convert the area from hectares down to acres, you see that this 15% reduction, roughly this reduction here, generates 0.2 of a ton of carbon dioxide equivalent per acre per year. But 160 kilograms of N, was roughly about 143 pounds of N, may still be a very low N application based upon current practices. So for instance, 200 kilograms of N approximates to 180 pounds of N. That approximates to roughly a 30% reduction. So with that 30% reduction of N, what you're not getting is a doubling of the CO2 emission reductions equivalent. You're getting actually a trebling, a 0.6 tons of CO2 emissions per acre per year. And this sort of figure, this rate here, this reduction, is very much in line with what currently the Chicago Climate Exchange offers for conservation tillage practice. It's the maximum amount of credit that a farmer or a producer can generate from producing no-till. And I won't go into the details of baseline and additionality and project implementation, but what you see is that the N2O reductions, even though the magnitude is very small, the equivalents in CO2 are very comparable to current practices, for instance, in the Chicago Climate Exchange. So the conclusions are, as I've alluded to, the protocol that we have here is relatively straightforward. It's just involving one proxy, N rate, reduce it, no crop yield effect. It's robust. In that case, it's simple. It's simple and transparent to all people. It's tangible to some extent. You know, before a project's implemented, you apply a certain amount of N. When it's during its implementation, you apply a certain lower amount. You get the credits generated from the nitrous oxide reduction. Negligible productivity loss, as you see on those graphs and John's data. There's an economic incentive. It's a profitable nitrogen rate range, whatever, based upon lots of field site trials in Michigan and beyond. And obviously, most importantly, hopefully, is the actual environmental incentive, and that these tier two factors, this non-linear relationship, generates a greater environmental incentive to introduce the project in the first place, because it generates more nitrous oxide reduction credits and CO2 reduction credits, such that the farmer can be credited for that and paid for this change in practice. So thank you very much. I want to just leave with some acknowledgements and take any questions if there's time.
We have time for one quick question.
How do you deal with additionality? I mean, if someone has been over applying, great, this might work for them, but what if they're a good steward all along? Are they out of...
It's a great question. It's one we wrestle with. What we tried to... We're looking at trying to define a baseline and therefore define additionality. What we came up with as the best approach was just the individual site-specific practices, looking back at the practitioners, the producers' management records, such that even if he has been genuinely a good steward of the land, he's still got potential to make reductions to lower levels, depending on his risk analysis. But you're right to say that somebody who's previously maybe over-fertilized